When Emma Donoghue's Room was published in 2010, it became an immediate literary sensation that transcended typical book club fare. The novel, shortlisted for the Man Booker Prize and later adapted into an Oscar-winning film starring Brie Larson, captivated readers with its extraordinary premise told through the innocent eyes of a 5-year-old boy. Stephen King called it one of the most affecting and subtly crafted novels of the year, while the New York Times praised its ferocious narrative authenticity. What makes this story particularly haunting is how Donoghue transforms a horrific scenario, inspired by real-life captivity cases like Austria's Josef Fritzl case, into a profound meditation on the resilience of the human spirit, the boundless love between mother and child, and the discovery of the world through a child's perspective. Through Jack's voice, we experience both the suffocating confines of captivity and the overwhelming vastness of freedom, making us question what truly constitutes a room in our own lives. Jack wakes up on his 5th birthday in a place he knows intimately as Room. To him, this 11-by-11-foot space isn't a prison, it's the entire universe, complete with its own rules, rhythms, and sacred objects. Everything in Room has a proper noun: bed, wardrobe, table, sink, plant, lamp, and bath. These aren't just objects, they're characters in Jack's life story, each with its own personality and significance. When he counts 100 cereal pieces for breakfast and uses Melty Spoon, his favorite because he's not the same, we understand that in his limited world, every object takes on outsized significance, becoming a touchstone of comfort and familiarity. The morning rituals reveal the careful structure Ma has created within their confinement, transforming mere survival into a semblance of normalcy. They play Hum, a game where they guess songs like Macarena and Row, Mo, Row Your Boat, creating moments of joy and learning. Ma takes her pill from the Silver Pack that has 28 little spaceships, and Jack takes vitamins to avoid going back to heaven, a euphemism Ma uses to explain mortality in terms her child can understand. These routines aren't merely habits, they're survival mechanisms, providing order and meaning in their isolated existence. Through exercises, story time, and educational games, Ma maintains a schedule that gives their days purpose and structure. Jack's relationship with the physical space reveals both his innocence and his remarkable capacity for wonder. He waters Plant with her 9 leaves, plus one tiny new one, monitoring its growth with the dedication of a botanist. He secretly looks for Spider, whose web he doesn't mention to Ma because she brushes webs away. She says they're dirty, but they look like extra thin silver to me. This observation shows Jack's ability to find beauty even in their imprisonment, his mind transforming mundane details into sources of wonder and delight. The room's dimensions become a playground for his imagination. Bed is an island, table becomes a fortress, and the space between wardrobe and wall transforms into a racetrack for toy cars. Door, made of shiny magic metal that beeps after 9 when Jack should be in wardrobe, represents both protection and confinement, a boundary between their world and whatever lies beyond. Its keypad lock, which Jack describes as making stars when pressed, becomes a mysterious ritual in his daily life. The sound of its beeping marks transitions in their day, like a clock marking time in this timeless space. The power of Jack's narration lies in what he doesn't understand but inadvertently reveals. When he mentions that Old Nick comes at night, readers recognize the horror that Jack cannot. They are captives of a predator. The casual way Jack describes these visits, "Ma puts me in wardrobe when Old Nick comes," carries devastating implications that only the reader can fully comprehend. Yet within this terrible reality, Ma has created a world where Jack feels safe, loved, and even happy, a testament to her extraordinary strength and maternal devotion. Through Jack's innocent perspective, we experience the profound paradox of their situation. Room is simultaneously a prison and a home, a place of captivity and of deep connection, where love and horror coexist in an 11-by-11-foot space. For Jack, television occupies a complex place in his understanding of reality. At 8:30 each morning, he watches Dora the Explorer, his favorite show. He touches Dora's head on the screen and tells her about his superpowers Now I'm 5, joining in her adventures and answering her questions. This interaction reveals Jack's confusion about what's real. He relates to television characters as if they're friends he can communicate with. Ma carefully regulates this exposure, typically allowing just one show, because TV rots our brains and turns people into zombies. On his birthday, she makes a rare exception for SpongeBob SquarePants. During commercials, Ma mutes the sound because they mush our brains even faster, showing her attempt to control the outside influences on Jack's developing mind. This careful curation of media reflects Ma's broader strategy of protecting Jack while still providing him stimulation and connection to language and ideas beyond their confined space. Television also introduces Jack to concepts he has no real-world experience with. When he watches wildlife shows about turtles or boxing matches where fighters wear special gloves, these become his only reference points for animals and sports. The disconnect between what Jack sees on television and his lived reality creates a cognitive dissonance that will eventually become crucial to the story's development. Most significantly, television unwittingly becomes the catalyst for Jack's understanding of the world beyond Room. When he notices a commercial showing a man taking pills from a bottle exactly like their killers, painkillers, this coincidence forces Ma to begin explaining that TV shows pictures of real things, real people, and real places that exist outside Room. This revelation marks the beginning of Jack's conceptual expansion, the first crack in the wall between his contained universe and the vast reality beyond it. The television represents both connection and separation. It connects Jack to images and ideas from the outside world while simultaneously emphasizing the distance between his experience and what exists beyond their walls. This tension between seeing and experiencing becomes central to Jack's development throughout the story, as he gradually reconciles the world he's seen on screen with the world he will eventually encounter. Within the confines of Room, Ma has created an elaborate daily structure that gives their existence meaning and purpose. This schedule isn't merely about passing time. It's about creating normalcy in an abnormal situation, providing developmental opportunities for Jack, and maintaining her own sanity through purposeful activity. Their days follow carefully planned segments: physical education, where they create track by putting table upside down on bed with rocker and rug on top, allowing Jack to do 25 there and backs; trampoline, Jack bouncing on bed while Ma commentates, Simon Says, and corpse, lying completely still. These activities aren't random. They're designed to exercise Jack's growing body despite severe space limitations. Educational activities punctuate their days. Ma creates a ruler from a cereal box to teach Jack measurement, discovering he's 3 feet 3 inches tall and that Room is 6 feet 7 inches tall and 11 feet wide in both directions. They read from their limited library of 10 books, 5 with pictures inside and 5 with pictures only on the covers. Jack has memorized these books, but still treasures each reading, particularly Dylan the Digger, though Ma makes a face about reading it again. Creative play emerges from their limited resources. They build Labyrinth from taped-together toilet roll tubes and Fort from cans and vitamin bottles. For orchestra, they make sounds from different objects: drumming on table, knocking on bed legs, dinging door with fork and spoon, and Jack's favorite, stepping on trash's pedal to make its lid go bing. These inventive games reveal Ma's determination to provide Jack with cognitive stimulation and creative outlets despite their circumstances. Even their meals become opportunities for learning and play. Jack helps prepare dinner, chopping broccoli with zigzag knife while singing the meatball song, as Ma fills their plates with spaghetti. For his birthday cake, Jack helps by blowing 3 eggs, using the pin from the Impression sunrise picture, then adds the emptied shells to Egg Snake, who lives coiled under bed, keeping us safe. These rituals and routines serve multiple purposes. They provide structure in a situation where time might otherwise lose meaning. They create opportunities for Jack's development, and they forge bonds between mother and child through shared activities. Most importantly, they transform what could be merely endurance into a form of living, not just surviving, but creating meaning within the most restrictive circumstances imaginable. Every night, Jack must sleep in wardrobe to hide from Old Nick, the man who keeps them captive. This nightly ritual represents the central tension in their existence, Ma's desperate need to protect Jack from their captor versus the reality of their imprisonment. When Jack mentions, "Ma doesn't want him looking at me, even as a baby, she always wrapped me in blanket before he came in," we understand her fierce maternal protection despite her powerlessness. Wardrobe becomes a space within a space, a further confinement that paradoxically represents safety. Jack has decorated its interior, pinning the pencil drawing Ma made of him sleeping inside wardrobe where Old Nick won't see it. This small act of personalization transforms a hiding place into something more like a bedroom, another example of how they create normalcy within their abnormal circumstances. The nighttime separation is both physical and psychological. While Jack counts 217 bed creaks before he stops, we understand what the child does not, that Ma endures sexual assault to protect her son. This counting reveals Jack's awareness of something wrong happening, even if he doesn't comprehend what it is. The wardrobe becomes the physical manifestation of the barrier Ma ties to maintain between Jack's innocent world and the horror of their captivity. When Jack occasionally breaks the rules, like when he extends remote's antenna through the slats and presses the switch, causing a crash that enrages Old Nick, the consequences are immediate and frightening. After this incident, Jack notices marks on their neck that look like his fingerprints, a chilling reminder of the violence underlying their situation. These moments puncture the relatively stable world Ma has created, revealing the precarious nature of their safety. The wardrobe also symbolizes the psychological compartmentalization necessary for survival. Just as Jack is physically hidden away at night, Ma has mentally separated aspects of her experience to maintain her sanity and ability to mother. This compartmentalization becomes harder to maintain as Jack grows older and more perceptive, eventually necessitating the unlying that will change everything about their existence. The pivotal shift in the narrative occurs when Ma begins what Jack calls unlying, revealing truths she had previously concealed. This process begins when Jack notices a commercial showing a man taking pills from a bottle identical to their painkillers, forcing Ma to explain that television shows real places and people that exist outside room. This revelation shatters Jack's understanding of reality as he struggles to comprehend where these things could possibly fit. Ma's explanation unfolds gradually over days, carefully calibrated to Jack's ability to process new information. She explains that room was originally a garden shed that Old Nick modified with soundproofing and security features. When they spot evidence of outside through skylight, Jack remains skeptical, but begins to wonder. The moment he sees an airplane through skylight, writing a letter I on the sky with its contrail provides tangible proof that outside exists, forcing him to reconsider everything he thought he knew. The unlying extends to Ma's personal history as well. She shares her terrifying story of being kidnapped at 19 while crossing a parking lot to her college library, how Old Nick tricked her with a story about a sick dog, blindfolded her, drugged her, and brought her to room. Her descriptions of early captivity reveal her desperation, crying constantly, sleeping 16 hours a day, watching TV nonstop, and attempting escape by digging through the floor only to discover a chain-link fence embedded beneath. This revelation process represents more than just truth-telling. It's a fundamental restructuring of Jack's world. Every aspect of his reality must be reinterpreted in light of this new knowledge. The television shows he thought were just pictures are windows into a real world. The skylight isn't just a source of light, but connects to an actual sky. Even his own existence takes on new meaning as he learns he was born in captivity. The unlying also marks a shift in Ma's approach to their imprisonment. Having protected Jack from the truth for 5 years, she now needs his understanding and cooperation for the escape plan she's formulating. This transition from protection through ignorance to protection through knowledge represents Jack's necessary but painful growth, the beginning of his journey from the confined world of Room to the vast complexity of outside. Ma's revelation that they must escape from Room marks the narrative's turning point. When Jack suggests ideas like smashing walls or explosions, Ma dismisses them as impractical, revealing her more realistic understanding of their situation. Instead, she develops an elaborate plan where Jack will pretend to be seriously ill, forcing old Nick to take him to a hospital. Once there, Jack is to alert medical professionals who will contact police. This plan represents an enormous psychological burden for both characters. For Jack, it means separation from Ma and confrontation with the outside he's only just begun to believe in. For Ma, it means entrusting their salvation to a 5-year-old and risking the possibility that she may never see her son again. When Jack initially resists going without her, Ma frames it as a heroic rescue mission only he can accomplish, appealing to his desire to be brave while acknowledging the terror of their separation. The meticulous preparation for this escape attempt reveals Ma's intelligence and determination. They practice each step, pretending to be sick, riding in the truck, getting to the hospital, contacting police, and saving Ma. This rehearsal serves both practical and psychological purposes, giving Jack concrete actions to follow while helping him process the frightening prospect of facing outside alone. When this first plan fails because old Nick refuses to take Jack to the hospital, Ma quickly develops Plan B. Jack will pretend to be dead, wrapped in the rug, and old Nick will take him outside to bury him. This escalation shows Ma's desperation and willingness to take increasingly dangerous risks. The practice sessions where Jack struggles to wriggle free from the tightly rolled rug are both physically and emotionally challenging, representing his literal struggle to break free from confinement. Ma's explanation that they must act quickly because of possible foreclosure on old Nick's house adds urgency to their plans. This detail also reminds us of the bizarre intersection between their captivity and ordinary life, that their prison might be lost due to something as mundane as missed mortgage payments. The juxtaposition of the extraordinary, their captivity and escape, with the ordinary, financial problems, highlights the surreal nature of their situation. The escape sequence itself is harrowing. Jack, trapped inside rug and playing dead, must remain perfectly still as old Nick carries him out of Room. His first experience of outside, feeling different air, hearing new sounds, is filtered through the suffocating confines of rug, creating a liminal space between captivity and freedom. His desperate struggle to free himself from rug when the truck stops symbolizes his larger struggle to break free from the psychological and physical constraints of his former existence. Ma's explanation that they must act quickly because of possible foreclosure on old Nick's house adds urgency to their plans. This detail also reminds us of the bizarre intersection between their captivity and ordinary life, that their prison might be lost due to something as mundane as missed mortgage payments. The juxtaposition of the extraordinary, their captivity and escape, with the ordinary, financial problems, highlights the surreal nature of their situation. The escape sequence itself is harrowing. Jack, trapped inside rug and playing dead, must remain perfectly still as old Nick carries him out of Room. His first experience of outside, feeling different air, hearing new sounds, is filtered through the suffocating confines of rug, creating a liminal space between captivity and freedom. His desperate struggle to free himself from rug when the truck stops symbolizes his larger struggle to break free from the psychological and physical constraints of his former existence. Jack's successful escape and the subsequent rescue of Ma mark not an ending, but a beginning, the start of their difficult journey of adjustment to the outside world. Their first days in the hospital revealed the complexity of this transition. Jack struggles with nightmares about vampire germs and someone breaking his bones, while Ma battles her own demons. Their counting of friends in the world, reaching 19, including hospital staff, family members, and others who helped them, shows how they're gradually expanding their social universe. The physical world overwhelms Jack with its vastness and variety. His first experience of rain startles him. At the mall, he's astonished that inside could be as big as outside, complete with trees and piped-in music. These reactions highlight how profoundly his perception has been shaped by confinement. Even basic experiences like weather and public spaces are foreign to him. Technology presents another adjustment challenge. Jack explores computers for the first time, playing Dora games while Ma searches for old friends on Facebook and reads articles about confinement and trafficking. This digital exploration represents their different approaches to reintegration. Jack engaging with familiar characters in a new medium, while Ma seeks to reconnect with her past life and understand her trauma in broader context. Family relationships prove especially complicated. When Ma's father visits from Australia, tension erupts when he initially can't look at Jack, saying, "It makes me shudder." Ma furiously defends her son, declaring, "He's the world to me," and insisting her father acknowledge both miracles, her return and Jack's existence. This confrontation highlights the complex reactions their situation provokes. Even loving family members struggle to accept the reality of Jack's origins. The television interview sequence reveals the public's voyeuristic fascination with their story and the pressure to conform to expected narratives of trauma and recovery. Ma rejects being called a beacon of hope, pointing out that countless others suffer in isolation, from prisoners in solitary confinement to abused children worldwide. This moment shows her resistance to having their experience simplified or commodified for public consumption. Ma's suicide attempt following the interview demonstrates the overwhelming pressure of reintegration. Unlike Jack, who has no normal to return to, Ma must reconcile her current self with the person she was before captivity, while simultaneously parenting a child with unique needs. As Noreen reminds her, "You'd have changed anyway. Moving into your 20s, having a child, you wouldn't have stayed the same." This insight highlights the impossibility of simply resuming her interrupted life. Their eventual visit to Room provides necessary closure. Jack finds it smaller, darker, and emptier than he remembers. It's not Room anymore without their things and with door standing open. His ceremonial goodbye to each part of Room and retrieval of Ma's drawing represents his psychological transition. The observation that Room is now just a crater, a hole where something happened, acknowledges that places are defined not by their physical boundaries, but by the experiences and relationships they contain. The genius of Room lies in its narrative perspective. By experiencing this harrowing story through 5-year-old Jack's eyes, readers encounter both captivity and freedom from a position of radical innocence. This perspective transforms what could be merely a horrific tale into a profound meditation on perception, adaptation, and the construction of reality. Jack's limited understanding creates dramatic irony throughout the narrative. When he mentions old Mick bringing groceries or describes the creaking of the bed at night, adult readers recognize the sinister implications that Jack cannot. This gap between Jack's perception and our understanding creates a unique reading experience. We simultaneously inhabit his innocent perspective while recognizing the horror of their situation. Language becomes particularly significant in this narrative approach. Jack's distinctive voice, with its capitalized nouns, creative compounds like hugormos, and unique phrases like gonde, creates a complete linguistic world reflecting his unusual development. His personification of objects, melty spoon, plant, door, reveals how, in the absence of a wider social world, everything in Room becomes animated with personality and significance. The perspective also highlights the power of maternal love and protection. Ma's extraordinary efforts to create normalcy, education, and even joy within their confinement become more remarkable when viewed through Jack's eyes. His matter-of-fact acceptance of their routines, from physical exercise to vocabulary lessons, reveals how successfully she has constructed a childhood for him despite impossible circumstances. Perhaps most powerfully, Jack's perspective forces readers to reconsider fundamental concepts like freedom, safety, and home. When Jack initially resists leaving Room and later expresses desire to return, we're confronted with the uncomfortable reality that familiarity can sometimes feel safer than freedom. His observation that Room is gone once their possessions are removed and door stands open challenges our understanding of what constitutes a place, suggesting that spaces are defined less by physical boundaries than by relationships and experiences within them. Through Jack's eyes, we also experience the overwhelming nature of freedom, his sensory overload in the outside world, the vastness of the sky, the multiplicity of people, the bombardment of new experiences, reminds us how much we take for granted in our daily navigation of complexity. His struggle to integrate his room-based understanding with the wider world mirrors our own lifelong process of expanding our perspectives and revising our understanding of reality. By the story's end, Jack has begun this integration process. His ceremonial goodbye to Room acknowledges both its importance in his development and the necessity of moving beyond it. In this way, his journey becomes a powerful metaphor for human growth itself, the constant process of expanding our rooms, revising our understanding, and finding our place in an ever-widening world.